Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 69. My name is John. I've listened to preachers. I've listened to fools. I've watched all the dropouts who make their own rules. One person conditioned to rule and control. The media sells it, and you live the role. Look, this is podcast 69. You should know that 69 is a sexual colloquialism for two people performing oral sex on each other at the same time. If you don't know that, or if that makes you uncomfortable, I can't help you. I'm a sexual being. I am not ashamed to say that I enjoy sex. There's a little part of me that wants to do a sexual theme for this podcast, to be fun and irreverent and more than a little naughty, in honor of the episode number. But then life happened. Something happened during the past month that I just feel the need to comment on. I would normally wait and give it some time for my thoughts to form, and part of me still wants to do that. That's why I sometimes put out a podcast where I discuss an event that happened a month or two ago. I've mentioned before, that is the downside of a podcast like mine, done by a guy like me who has a full-time job and a relationship to maintain. It takes time to write, record, edit, and upload, and the topics can become stale subjects. But this situation is different. I don't think I will ever come to a reasonable conclusion, so I may as well just comment now. Of course, in doing so, I will need to offer this disclaimer. I'm going to say a lot of things in this podcast about the Paris attacks, religion, and how I understand the views of certain types of religious people. I want anyone listening to this to understand right now that my thoughts are not fully formed. I may be leaning toward one answer today, but reconsider it tomorrow. This is not a situation where anyone can say they are fully informed and fully subjective. There is classified information that the public is not privy to. Even the information that is available to the public is so massive and possibly erroneous. So how can a person come to a definitive conclusion if the supposed facts cannot be trusted? The so-called experts have their own agenda, or are so myopic to their beliefs that they can't see any other option, even if it's better than the one they've chosen. And on top of all that, I'm trying to keep this down to about 30 minutes. No one is going to present all the answers in that amount of time. I've been grabbing pieces of information, and something that has nothing to do with the Paris attacks, but I think it helps put things in perspective. So this will be a little disjointed, and I'm going to jump from one thought to another without much of a segue, so bear with me. You never know when I may accidentally say something brilliant. I do find it interesting that many on the far left are supportive of France striking back at the terrorists. They're supporting France doing so in anger and in swiftness without thinking. Gina and I were talking about it a few days ago, and she brought up a good point. France is reacting much faster than the U.S. did following the 9/11 attacks in 2001. France was bombing the next day. We waited a couple of months. Where are the people calling for caution? Where are the concerns for the destabilization of the region? Why have they been protesting the United States all these years and then suddenly fully support France? Well, France is farther along the march to socialism than the United States is. The far-left collectivists hate the idea of their ideal being attacked. I guess it doesn't matter to the left that an attack happened, but rather who was attacked. Or maybe, just maybe, the left wants this war. Maybe they feel if they can push World War III on us, we'll be so frightened we'll sign over more of our rights. Yeah, they're probably right about that, at least in this country. Maybe they want things to escalate so fast that people won't pay attention to the fact that the attacks were done by terrorists who were backed by the Obama administration. Most other people reacted the way you would expect. Facebook filled itself with profile photos with a French flag filter. Artists all around the world published memorials in their own way. But not every artist's work was appreciated in his country. I'm going to read an article from Comics in the AM, and apologies for any name butchery. Iranian cartoonist Hadi Haidari was arrested Monday in the Tehran newspaper office where he works, a day after posting a cartoon on Instagram showing a weeping face with the Eiffel Tower for a nose. According to Haidari's co-workers, a young man came with a warrant. He showed Hadi the warrant, and they took him quietly. They speculated that he was arrested by the Revolutionary Guards Intelligence Organization. Haidari has been arrested and detained several times, most recently in September 2012, when one of his cartoons drew strong negative attention from a group of 150 Iranian parliament members, state officials, and clerics. The Iranian government banned the newspaper that carried it and arrested Haidari and the newspaper's manager, Mehdi Rahmanian. Rahmanian was sent to Evin prison, the same prison where cartoonist Etna Farghani chronicled her mistreatment earlier this year. Haidari and the newspaper were acquitted in December 2012, and the ban on the newspaper was lifted. Hadari's arrest comes in the midst of what seems to be a crackdown on journalists, as the Revolutionary Guards have confirmed the arrests of a number of reporters and editors in recent weeks. This is more on the extreme example of stifling speech. Certainly there have been ample examples in world history of governments doing worse than repeated imprisonment for a person who says something the government doesn't like. But you can see the seeds of such intolerance being sown in America today. If someone says something deemed unpopular, there's a push to publicly silence, shame, and punish them. Just look in very recent history. Try using the phrase, "that's gay," in a derogatory manner. Try calling someone retarded. Try saying anything negative about Obama around Democrats or Reagan around Republicans. Try saying anything unpopular on college campuses. That last one should worry you the most, because those are the next generation, learning that they can banish, exclude, and silence anyone who says something that might challenge their precious worldview or hurt their precious little feelings. This is a snowball rolling downhill that would eventually create a generation who believes they can use the force of government to silence speech they don't like, just like Iran is doing now. Another test to the notions of individual liberty and personal freedom comes from the influx of Syrian refugees, which many fear have terrorists hiding among them, seeking entry into the United States and other countries. this can be one of those things that are contentious even among libertarians. Can you, should you, put limitations on people coming into the country, even those who are fleeing danger and oppression from their homeland? And if it's contentious among libertarians, you can only imagine the vitriol hurled across the political aisle. My Facebook feed was littered with memes on both sides of the argument. One of the more extreme leftist collectivists amongst my Facebook friends posted a meme about how in the Bible, Joseph and Mary were Middle Eastern refugees looking for a place to stay. Obviously, the implication is the Christian thing to do is let the Syrian refugees in. This is what happens when people who don't read the Bible try to tell Christians how they should think. Joseph and Mary were refused a place to stay, so they had to sleep in a barn. You're not helping your cause. Just like Obama telling us just in time for Thanksgiving that the refugees are pilgrims coming to a new land, just like the Europeans coming to the new world. This coming from a leftist who believes the Europeans came here to kill the natives and take over the land. You're not helping your cause. Do refugees have a right to come here? Yes. Do we have an obligation to help them? No. Strange stance to take? Okay, let me see if I can clarify. You have the natural right as a human being, not as an American under the Constitution, but as a human being, to travel the earth. You may encounter places you can't go because of trespassing on an individual's property, but government should not be interfering with that natural right by refusing people to come to America. But that doesn't mean any citizen of America has an obligation, and by has an obligation I mean can be forced by the government to help out somebody coming into the country. If anything, this country became strong because individuals didn't get any federal government assistance. They got help from friends and a kind-hearted community, which meant you generally had to be a good person who people wanted to help. If you want to help refugees, fine. Please go and give whatever time, energy, and money you wish. Don't make someone else surrender their earnings if they don't want to help. Could there be terrorists among the refugees? It's certainly possible. It's also very likely that terrorists have entered the country through other means, despite immigration rules and regulations already. Do we then punish the innocents in order to ease our fears of the possibility of a terrorist among them? Do we risk the innocence of our own countrymen by possibly letting in a terrorist that will later wreak havoc? I can't say I have the answer, because there is a part of me that resists taking a definitive stance. But I can say that in situations like this, I believe we must err on the side that offers the most freedom to the most people. I want to read you an excerpt from a recent piece written by Gary Johnson. Yes. If they can, ISIS will attack us here in the United States, that is clear. And yes, while government does far too much and interferes far too much in our lives, its most fundamental responsibility is to protect us from those who would do us harm and destroy our liberties. They are attacking us, and we must defend ourselves, our families, and our way of life. But engaging in hysteria and reverting to un-American notions of tracking innocent people because of the way they look or pray, throwing out the Fourth Amendment protections against unreasonable searches, and closing our borders are not helpful and will not make us safe. As predictable as they may be in today's soundbite politics. It doesn't help if we sacrifice our liberties in order to assuage fears. And it doesn't help our stance of championing personal liberties if we force the surrender of personal liberties from innocent people trying to come in from outside our borders. But some would say that there's a prejudice problem in the United States. Oh, if we were being truthful, it's a problem throughout the entire world and throughout history, and to isolate the United States is grossly unfair. Human beings in general fear that which we do not understand. Human beings in general fear things and people foreign to our way of life. Weeks before the attacks, LGBT legislation was voted down in Houston, and there was a controversy about it. One of the most well-known opponents to the legislation was former Houston Astros great Lance Berkman. Berkman gave a radio interview with Michael Berry. I listened to that interview the day it was recorded, and actually, that was the original seed of this podcast before the attacks happened. And tangentially, it ties in with the Parisian stuff. During the interview, Berkman stated, "To me, tolerance is the virtue that's killing this country. We're tolerant of everything. You know, everything is okay as long as you want to do it. And as long as it feels good to you, then it's perfectly acceptable for you to do it. Those are the kinds of things that lead you down a slippery slope, and you'll get in trouble in a hurry. So I guess the bottom line is, whenever I have an opportunity to make a stand for Christ, and to make a stand for values that I think are right, and that I know work and practice by applying in everyday life, then I'm going to do that. I'm going to use my platform for good, or try to, and obviously there's consequences for that. You get called names, and you may have a black mark against your name if you ever wanted a job in the media, but those are all things I'm willing to risk for what I believe is right." Moments later in the interview, he was asked how he would explain his actions to the youth baseball team he coaches. He stated, "There is right and wrong. There is absolute truth. Don't let anyone tell you that truth is relative. And when you feel that the truth is being violated, you've got to be bold and take a stand in favor of that truth." Now, if you listen to the interview, he brings up that everything listed in the Houston ordinance is already covered under federal law. If Houston is honoring the United States Constitutional Agreement of equal rights toward everyone, including lesbian, gays, bisexuals, transgendered, queer, etc., then I understand why you would not need a duplicate law. More laws do not make society better, especially if it's already the law. That being said, opposing the law because you think it's unnecessary is one thing. Opposing the law because you think your morality is superior to the way others live their life is pitiful. Let me repeat a line from the interview. So I guess the bottom line is, whenever I have an opportunity to make a stand for Christ and to make a stand for values that I think are right and that I know work and practice by applying in everyday life, I'm going to do that. As far as I'm concerned, that statement is fine, but he needs to add a couple of words. Let me try that again with my edit. So I guess the bottom line is, whenever I have an opportunity to make a stand for Christ and to make a stand for values that I think are right for me, and that I know work for me and practice by applying in everyday life, that I'm going to do that. See the difference? I was in the Christian church for 33 years. I was baptized at the age of 12, so you can say I was an official Christian for 21 years, at least according to the denomination I was part of. I know the values that Lance Berkman and other Christians think are right. I am no longer a Christian because I found those so-called values are not necessarily right, and I do not believe they work. His truth is not absolute like he claims. His truth is not universal, no matter how you try to spin it as some snake oil cure-all Old West elixir. What he believes is truth, I believe, is false. So I don't follow his, I'll be generous and call it logic, on opposing equal rights for people you think are sinners. Do you feel the same about people tolerating your religion? Do you feel that if some Houston ordinance reinforcing freedom of religion, specifically Christianity, came up for a vote, that it should be shot down because someone like me doesn't believe in it? Would you vote against it because there's already a federal law defending your right? Do you think you have the right to limit the natural rights of others because you disagree with their lifestyle? If so, would you have a problem with others limiting your rights because they disagree with Christianity? If you've listened to previous podcasts, you'll recall me saying something like this many, many times. If you think socialism is the way to go, then get together with your socialist friends and come to a voluntary agreement and go about your socialist business. But the moment you try to force me or anybody else to be in your socialist clique, I'm going to oppose you. Likewise, if Lance Berkman and his Christian friends think Christianity is the way to go, then they should get together with other Christians and do Christian things. But the moment you try to force me or anybody else to conform to your Christian morality, I'm going to oppose you. I know it is possible to believe marriage is between one man and one woman, but not support legislation forcing that definition on everyone else. I've seen it happen. By extension of that, I know you can be a Christian and not force everyone else to follow your faith. If you do believe in a theocracy, if you do believe you can force others to become a Christian, if you do believe your faith gives you the right to use government to enact your beliefs as law, then I'm going to fight you to the nail. And I would suggest that the United States is not the right country for you to live in. Ooh, that's not popular. But think about it. If you live in a country where everyone is supposed to be guaranteed natural rights, individual freedom, and personal responsibility, but you believe in limiting rights and freedom, then why would you want to live there? The obvious answer is you'd rather take away the rights of others than be tolerant of the way they live. I'm sure that pisses off the right wing. So I may as well make myself really unpopular and piss off the left wing as well. I believe the same thing applies for Muslims in the United States. For example, fuck Sharia law. It's not compatible with the United States Constitution. If you can't let go of your fascism, then you don't belong here, no matter what your religion, or lack thereof. However, these refugees must be given the benefit of a doubt. The fact that these people are a different religion is immaterial. The fact that these people are poor is immaterial. The fact that these people have what some in our nation consider to be unusual beliefs is immaterial. If they are willing to come to this country, live their lives peaceably, and not force others to conform to their belief system, then they should be welcome with open arms. Of course, if you are so adamant about them staying in their own country, perhaps you should consider that they are only here because of continued interference in their region by the United States and other countries. Our interference is only exacerbating the situation. Let's go back a couple of generations and look at the United Kingdom and United States overthrow of the Iranian government. Our government doesn't want to talk about that because you start unraveling their tapestry when you pull on the thread. When our government helped the British government overthrow the Iranian government back in the 50s, the installation of the new regime led to an entire generation of Iranian citizens oppressed and hateful of the interfering West. So when that generation patiently waited for an opportunity to overthrow their oppressors, they ended up, in part, taking American citizens hostage for 444 days. I was young in those days, barely able to comprehend the complexities of international politics. And all I really do remember is a picture tacked on the wall of a rundown diner where my dad took us to get black cows, of Mickey Mouse giving the finger to Iran. So now, Iran was the bad guy, and the United States needed allies in the area, so they teamed up with Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein. Hussein, like the Iranian government the U.S. helped install, oppressed people. Once Hussein decided to invade United States ally Kuwait, the atrocities he committed could no longer be ignored, so the U.S. pushed him out of Kuwait, but he remained a perceived threat. President Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and John Kerry all stated in the 90s that the dictator would need to be removed from office, likely by forces led by the United States. Making allies out of bad guys who oppress people, or who later come back to hurt and kill people, including our own citizens, seems to be a common mistake by the United States. I mean, when the Mubarak regime was toppled in Egypt, people didn't understand why they hated the United States so much. That's because the United States supported the guy who oppressed and murdered opposition for decades. Then, of course, there is the theory that Osama bin Laden was aided by the CIA to help with the common enemy of the USSR in Afghanistan. Yes, that is a theory repeatedly denied, but with our government's track record of hopping into bed with the bad guys, is it really that much of a stretch? So a few years ago, when the United States government started thinking the government of Syria needed to be taken care of as well, we realized that the Syrian government was backed by Russia and China. Those are some heavy hitters. So rather than directly opposing them, we figured it'd be a good idea to quietly back some opposing forces that would take out the Syrian government. The result of that backing is ISIS, the group who is taking credit for the Parisian attacks. And yes, I say we because it is our government that is doing it, and we are the ones who are supposed to be their boss. We're letting them get away with it. Now, we don't even care about constitutional requirements. We just invade and or bomb any country we think needs it. Hell, we even send military strikes into ally Muslim countries without their knowledge. We bomb aspirin factories and hospitals. It's a mess. It's complex and complicated. It's disastrous. This shotgun approach where we just freak out and attack anything we think is a bad guy is the worst thing our government can possibly do. And they call libertarians crazy. We've been at this current incarnation for quite a while now. Operation Ajax, Iranian hostages, attacks on embassies, ships, and the first World Trade Center attack, Iraq, Al-Qaeda, 9/11, and now ISIS. They keep coming. Every incarnation is worse than the next. You may think we'll just keep fighting each level boss and eventually get to the end of the game. We won't. We need to take the approach of the terrorists. I know, that sounds odd. Terror attacks, believe it or not, are actually down overall. Terrorists aren't taking the same shotgun approach that we are doing. Someone once asked, who the most dangerous man is? The answer is the one who will patiently wait for revenge. They're patient. They study to find the weaknesses. They experiment, and when they think they have it, they strike. And they're not always successful, but when they are, the whole world notices. If we are to fight these people, we have to have their same kind of patience. Our shotgun approach kills innocents and leaves enough of the bad guys alive to come back in stronger incarnations. The cycle is perpetuating. It's coming around again. Jets are being shot down. Sides are being taken. This latest turn is not from a right-wing administration, but from a left-wing administration. Libertarians have been saying it for years. Republicans and Democrats are two sides of the same coin. They are a duopoly, putting on the act of fighting with each other and making us think the side we choose is pure and righteous, while the other side is nefarious and harmful. They're both nefarious. They're both harmful. They're both distracting us, while they drag us into another war where people like us will be the cannon fodder. While they sit in their ivory towers and preach how much you and I need to sacrifice for their cause. There are those of us who no longer believe the hyperbole. There are those of us who have broken free of the propaganda. Whenever you are finally sick enough of their bullshit, we're ready for you to hop aboard the crazy train. Just say the word. Our arms are open. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.